And good evening, I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The Cabinet has agreed to review the Sedition Act so it can only be used to protect the royal institution from acts of provocation. Now, the government has been under scrutiny of late over its use of the Sedition Act against Kedah caretaker Menteri Besar Sanusi Matno, and also amid warnings of a crackdown on remarks touching on issues pertaining to race, religion and royalty, known in Malaysia as the three R's. Now, let's get the thoughts of constitutional lawyer Nizam Bashir about this latest development. He joins us on the line now. Nizam, can you begin our conversation by sharing what you make of the Cabinet's decision to amend the Sedition Act, restricting it only to use against provocations against the royal institutions? Can we talk a little bit about that from a legislative perspective? Is this a good thing?
Yeah, well, If you look at the campaign promise in G16, the Pakatan Harapan political party via its Kita Boleh manifesto promised that it would review and repeal draconian provisions of acts like the Sedition Act, Communications and Multimedia Act, and the Printing and Presses Publications Act. So the recent announcement, unfortunately, did not choose to repeal the Sedition Act 1948. It only opted to review the applicability of the Act, and the Act was supposed to be restricted only to provocations against royal institutions. So put simply, Pakatan Harapan's campaign promise to repeal the Act has not been honoured. But I suppose the larger question is this, should the Act be abolished? Now, if you look at developments across our shores, Australia has repealed the sedition clauses in its country, New Zealand has repealed sedition law. Singapore has repealed the Sedition Act. United Kingdom has abolished sedition as an offence. So if we play a game of monkey see, monkey do, Malaysia should abolish the Sedition Act. But I accept that governing a nation like Malaysia is not a game, and there may be various permutations in play. Certainly in a nation as diverse as ours, leave alone trying to govern a nation which holds a special place for royal institutions. But despite those permutations, I do not see that affirming the constitutional right to speech and expression is necessarily inimical to our royal institutions, particularly when balanced with permissible restrictions, or even attempting to maintain the Sedition Act is supposedly the only way to ensure that our royal institutions continue to prosper. I think certainly our royal institutions do good work on many fronts, and perhaps that is the best form of armor and shield against unwarranted or scurrilous criticisms. If you look, for example, in the United Kingdom, Queen Elizabeth II, when she was still the monarch in UK, she continued to retain the affection of citizens there, even after sedition was abolished as an offense in 2009. The institution there did not fall into disuse, but conversely continued to maintain its relevance.
Okay, all right. So I want to kind of delve deeper into that. When we think about the possible implications of narrowing the definition of in the Sedition Act over so that it would only apply to the royal institutions, how might this be different from, say, the Lèse Majesté laws that are still, in use in other countries, Thailand being the most prominent in mind?
Yeah, well, traditional lèse majesté laws are a different beast as compared to the Sedition Act 1948. So, for example, and I'm no expert in the area because it relates to laws of another country, but I took a look at what the provisions are in Thailand, for example, and one of the provisions is that no person shall expose the king to any sort of accusation or action. So certainly with that sort of a provision, it's very vast, very wide. The Sedition Act, when juxtaposed against that particular provision, fares better in that sense because in the Sedition Act, there are exceptions which affirm it is not seditious to show that any ruler has been misled or mistaken in any of his measures. So in that sense, Malaysia does have it a bit better, but I think the question is, can it be improved? Can it be made better? The complaints against the Sedition Act, as you mentioned earlier, the definitions are a bit wide. And I think, certainly, more robust defences can be accorded to the accused. So that's something for us to consider.
So, for instance, the Law Minister Azlina Othman Said said that she used the term, if I may quote her, provocations against the royal institution. From a legal perspective, how do we think about what that means? Provocations in this context, are there concerns about the ambiguity of this term? Does it need to be clarified? Because in law, language is everything.
Now, that's a very good question. You see, part of the problem always is this. There's always cultural variations when we look at a phrase like that. So in Malaysia, you know, what can be considered provocative may differ from maybe, you know, from how things are in the UK. But, I suppose it can range from matters like, you know, if you're advocating for the abolition of the monarchy, that can be provocative. Criticizing the use of public funds, that can be provocative. Questioning the relevance of monarchies in modern society. And these are typical matters which actually may be covered by the Sedition Act itself. So the challenge, I suppose, is when we are construing the phrase that she was alluding to, how do we balance the need to refrain from those kind of provocative remarks about the royal institutions and the need for there to be discourse or even robust discourse, given that our royal institutions possess a particular role in the legal framework of the nation. Now, for example, if you look at the present position of subject matters our rulers have, they play a role in terms of appointment of individuals to various posts in the nation. Yeah, they also play a role in the appointment of judges, for example. So, given that they have a particular constitutional role, to what extent should we, number one, not allow that sort of a discourse? And on the other hand, to what extent should we allow discourse, given that these are all very important posts, you know?
Right. And from a constitutional standpoint, if we were to look at the constitution, are there challenges, maybe complexities that we need to take into account when the government is thinking about reviewing or amending the Sedition Act? I mean, are there considerations that need to be taken into account? We have had discussions before as to whether the Sedition Act is contradictory to the Constitution, whether it is in fact unconstitutional. How do we think about it, Nizam?
Well, if you look at the present political power of our government at this point in time, it's got a two-thirds majority. Yeah, so it has about 148 members of parliament supporting it. The previous administration, when it was governed by when Tun Mahathir was the prime minister, they did not have a two-thirds majority. So given the present position of our government, I think it rightly does not have any difficulty in terms of trying to review, amending, or even repealing the Sedition Act 1948. But of course, I do not know whether any of the support that was given to the government was conditional on the Sedition Act not being repealed. I don't know. Yeah. But looking at it purely from a legal perspective, I don't see any particular complexities arising from the review and amendment. I think if there's any issues, it would not be on a legal front. It perhaps may be from a political front.
Right. Okay. Well, there was also talk that there may be need for new laws to govern the other two R's, the race and religion, provocations against race and religion. Are new laws the way to go, Nizam? Is that the way we should be thinking about the other two R's?
Well, I think my position on this is quite simple. As long as whatever laws accommodate, you know, part two of the federal constitution, fundamental liberties, etc., it's fine. And I think proper engagement should be there with the various stakeholders and all that. At this point in time, you have a 1948 Act, which is a pre-independence law. It's about 75 years old. So I think it's high time we, you know, reconsider exactly what we are looking at whenever we are trying to come up with legislation to ensure that, you know, either the three R's or even just the royal institutions are preserved from unwarranted criticisms.
Okay. Having said that, though, how do we encourage open discussion about the three R's beyond the issues that you raised, but having, you know, in the spirit of human rights and open communication and transparency in this day and age, how should the government be thinking about that without risking all the arguments of social division and undermining national unity, public disorder, all the things that the Sedition Act was said to avoid. Are there ways that we in this day and age can have these difficult conversations as a country?
Now let's look at international standards when it comes to speech and expression. So to put it very simply, everything is kosher. Everything is kosher, save and unless there is speech and expression which seeks to promote, spread or justify discrimination, hostility or violence. Yeah. Now, this may be a challenging concept in a country made up of various races and religions, but if you really think about it, because that's the common refrain we hear. This is a country which is unique. This is a country that's got, you know, various races, various religions. But if you think about it, which country isn't made up like that? I mean, UK has got, you know, various races, various religions. So I don't know sometimes why we tend to seek refuge in that mantra. You know, this is a country that's very unique in terms of its diversity. So I think certainly we should try, you know, irrespective of how challenging it may be, we should try to look beyond the present framework or the present narrative. And certainly if you look at what's happening on the internet and even social media, I think things are relatively open. Yeah. The government can fearmonger all it wants, but the discussions there are robust. So what has happened despite that robustness? Broadly speaking, nothing particularly alarming. And I think as opposed to fearmongering, the government should disseminate positive messages about race, religion, and even our royal institutions. I think it's always a bit harder to hate. It's always a bit harder to be angered by something that you gotten to know a bit better. If I can be a bit more colorful, I suppose, in this sense, let me share something that Martin Luther King has once said, and I think which certainly remains topical despite it being said maybe 30, 40 years ago. So vis-a-vis the question, what should we do where the three R's are concerned? This is what Martin Luther King has said. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. So I apologize if that sounds like a cliche akin to a message one finds in a Hallmark card, but I think sometimes we just need to speak simple truths. This is a blessed nation. The nation deserves that. I think we deserve that.
That wasn't cliche at all. That gave me goosebumps, Nizam. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We appreciate your time. Constitutional lawyer Nizam Bashir. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. We're going to continue our discussion about the recent announcement that Cabinet has agreed in principle to amend the Sedition Act, this to ensure that it is only used to protect the royal institution from acts of provocation. Joining me now is Karen Chia. She's the president of the Malaysian Bar. Karen, thank you for being on the show today. The Malaysian Bar has long called for the repeal of the Sedition Act. I want to get your thoughts on what you make of the Cabinet's decision to review the Sedition Act, to amend it, as opposed to repealing it, which was one of the things that the current government had campaigned for a long time ago when they were in opposition. So is amending it good enough in your estimation?
Well, you know, the Malaysian Bar, as you know, we have always asked for the repeal of the Sedition Act, and our stand has not changed. We remain with the call for the total repeal of the Sedition Act. Although, you know, the review that that was mentioned earlier on about the Sedition Act, it may be a progress, but in our view, it is not good enough. We still want this old piece of legislation to go away. We think that, you know, this act still does curtail a lot of the freedom of expression, and we do not think that it is in line with our federal constitution. So in this day and age, Melissa, there is really no place for the Sedition Act at all. We're looking at a piece of legislation which is approximately 75 years old, and the world has changed so much from then till now. So really, this act really must go.
Okay, all right. So we will, I think that's the line that civil society and bodies like the Malaysian Bar has been pushing for, the total abolishment of this act. But it seems that it might be an incremental one step at a time by amending it to only protect the royal institutions. If we were to focus on that specifically, what needs to be changed in the current act if it were to only be used against acts of provocation of the royal institution? Karen, would it be a difficult amendment to make?
I think that amendment would just be to confine it only to the royalty, if I'm not mistaken. But there's still so much of problems in terms of the wordings in the Act. So the Act talks about the word seditious tendency, and the word seditious tendency really is very, very vague. Anything could be seditious tendency. How does it insult or annoy others? I mean, what is insulting and annoying to you may not be something which is insulting or annoying to me. And so therefore, that vagueness of that lack of definition of what amounts to seditious tendency is what should really be looked at. And I think when we're also looking at that, the element of intention is also not in the Sedition Act. And, you know, that has got to be something which needs to be addressed. That's the reason why we were pushing and still, you know, we're still pushing for the National Harmony Bills, because we are actually interconnecting what we call the hate speech to an element of physical harm.
Okay, let's elaborate on that. The Malaysian Bar has proposed three bills to replace, to replace the Sedition Act? And what can you elaborate on the bills that you have proposed?
The three bills that we've been pushing for, I think since 2010, so many years ago, that's still up in the air. And you know, those bills have already been drafted. Of course, it can be fine-tuned, but those bills, basically what we're trying to do is that we're trying to criminalize hate speech, and we are trying to confine it only to hate speech that is interconnected with physical harm. There must be some kind of intention. The definition of what is hate speech is very clear in there. And we're talking about providing a lot more space for freedom of expression.
Right. Karen, when you say that we have to disentangle in the Sedition Act, the idea of, you know, the seditious tendency over physical harm, can you talk to me a little bit about the role of avoiding public disorder? Because that seems to come up a lot in the use of the Sedition Act. It is to avoid public disorder. How do we think that through?
Well, you know, I think that is probably the narrative that's being put out there, that it is supposed to guard against, you know, public disorder. But if we look at history, the Sedition Act has been abused all the time, and it's been used mainly to take action against politicians and also activists. And so, you know, I think that kind of narrative actually is not accurate.
Okay, all right. And when we talked about the vague definitions within the Sedition Act of seditious tendency, the Law Minister, Azlina Osman Said, had used the specific term provocations towards the royal institution. From a legal perspective, do you see challenges that might arise from defining, maybe narrowing the scope of providing for what such provocations are in future court cases?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the same problem will still arise in terms of the lack of definition. I mean, anything, what amounts to provocation? Again, you know, we see this in the same vein as what amounts to seditious tendency. I mean, anything could be provocative. There needs to be that diving down into the details in terms of is there any element of physical harm that's going to be involved? Because if there is, then we're talking about it being connected to something tangible. is that intention in order to do something which is connected again to physical harm. And I think, okay, that really provides a really clear definition when we are saying something, whether or not we are actually beyond the limit. So, yeah, there will be possible challenges in terms of defining provocation.
And I understand there was a recent dialogue session when it, in terms of how the government should be handling the current issues involving the three R's, so to speak. Has the Malaysian Bar engaged with the government and other stakeholders? And how might you do so in the review process to advocate for the interests of, you know, free speech and transparency?
Well, that engagement session, the Malaysian Bar was represented. I was actually present during that session. And we basically mentioned the same things that I was just talking about just now, you know, repeal the act, enact the National Harmony Bills. We think that the Harmony Bills is a better approach in terms of dealing with promoting unity and harmony within the country. We are talking about a more holistic structure of how we can actually have the citizens of the country go through a period where race, religion, and royalty, okay, is something that, you know, it's an open topic that we must be talking about. We cannot not say anything about it, but within a certain acceptable confines only, that, you know, if it goes beyond that limit, then of course, you know, people should be punished. But I would also like to add that the National Harmony Bills do not just talk about the criminalization, the criminalization of hate speech. We are also talking about establishment of a standalone, independent commission, which is supposed to promote this harmony and unity. And that commission is supposed to come up with ideas, how the country should move forward, what kind of action can be implemented, should there be training to the enforcement agencies, should there be education within the educational system. Those are the things which I think the commission would be very useful in terms of bringing the country forward, especially in our Malaysia Madani concept, where we're supposed to be talking about things and we're supposed to understand by talking about things.
Right. And what's your sense of whether there is an appetite for these national harmony laws for this independent commission? What are you getting from the ground? Is there appetite for this?
Perhaps at the moment, it appears that there is a slight appetite, not a whole lot of appetite. But, you know, we have seen the government flip-flop on the decision on whether to enact the National Harmony Bill since 2012. At one point in 2012, our then Prime Minister said they will repeal the Sedition Act and they will enact National Harmony Laws. Then the government changed a couple of times and the decision to enact and not to enact also flip-flopped a couple of times. And the last time this was discussed was probably back in 2019. And at that point in time, they've decided, nope, we're not going to enact National Harmony Laws. But today we're talking about it again. So talking about it again is really good. I mean, we're starting the conversation again. So I would like to continue that conversation. We are willing to help out with the drafting of the bills, to fine-tune it, whatever that's necessary in order to push this forward.
Right. Okay, so my last question, Karen, I have to ask. The government, the cabinet has agreed in principle to review and amend the sedition law. Do you foresee any challenges in doing so? Where might the resistance come from? Do you think it might actually happen given the agreement in principle and potential implications of the move?
Perhaps the resistance may come from within some of the ministries rather than from the civil societies. I think that, you know, maybe we should be looking at the Home Ministry. We should be looking at maybe the National Unity Ministry. Do they think that there is a need for us to review the Act? Perhaps there is resistance from within the government rather than outside.
Karen, thank you for joining me on the show today. I appreciate your time and your insights. Karen Chia, President of the Malaysian Bar, there wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.